Chronicles of the Order, a short story anthology set in the world of Geist. Welcome to the second story in the Chronicles of the Order. This story is set long after the first arrival of the Geists in Arrakim. The world was plunged down into a period of great darkness in which records are very, very sketchy. But what is apparent is that out of that darkness arose the Order of the Eye and the Fist. They worked out how to partner people, an active who can wield the runes, and a sensitive who can see the truth of the world. Their partnership is cemented with something called the Bond, which is a telepathic and spiritual and magical connection shared between a sensitive and an active. In this week's story, we examine that bond with the help of Nobilis and his story, Bondmate.
Bondmate by Nobilis Reed. Weldrew passed under the heavy arch that separated the Abbey courtyard from the main streets, hands clenched at his side under a nondescript grey robe. He didn't want to be a member of the Order at this moment. Couldn't be when you came right down to it. Not without his sensitive. Tiara was still there. He could feel her through the bond. And it was killing him. The raw chaos on the other end, the swirl of instinct and emotion made him want to cry out in agony every time a rogue thought crossed the space between them. The urge to lash out, hit something, hit himself, was almost irresistible. His first instinct to make it all stop was to cause himself pain. But that wouldn't work. He had learned that in his cell, where he had tried to meditate his way through the madness. The bandage around his left hand was evidence of how badly that attempt had gone. Walking was better. Walking occupied some small portion of his mind and kept that portion free of the storm. His name. He heard his name.
Deacon Weldrew!
He was a short fellow, standing next to a handcart filled with fresh fruit and vegetables. Deacon Weldrew had only bought from this man a few times over the years, and he remembered being surprised that the man knew his name on each occasion. He faked a smile and altered course to bring himself within conversation distance. Good afternoon.
The apricots are particularly nice today, Deacon Weldrew. I've set aside a couple. Perfectly ripe, ready for eating out of hand.
He picked up a lumpy paper bag and held it out by one edge, so that the little orange-pink spheres inside were visible with just a peek. For a moment, Weldrew thought of ripe, fleshy, half-covered globes of a different sort entirely, the kind that were usually bound into a corset. He cleared his throat and produced a coin, hurriedly exchanging it for the little bag and crumpling the top to conceal the tempting shapes inside.
"Harvest seems to be going well this year,"
he said quickly, as his nervous eyes glanced at the well-stocked cart.
"Yes, we've had a very good combination of sun and rain for apricots. All the orchards have bumper crops, and they're particularly sweet. Aren't you going to try one?"
"Perhaps later." The thought of biting into that fruit was just a bit too tempting just yet, given the images rushing through his mind.
"Well, don't delay it too long. They'll have gone bad tomorrow."
"And the fact that snacking on one of your apricots is going to drive business your way is just a happy side effect." The man grinned and spread his arms.
"I am a businessman, Deacon Weldrew."
Conversation was good. It gave him something to fill his mind with, something to drive away the alien thoughts that Tiara couldn't help sending through the bond. He felt relief and a new reserve of energy. The apricots smelled a bit better, and as he pulled one from the bag and bit into it, the soft skin and sweet flesh lacked the overtones of blood that had been there just a few seconds before. The vendor nodded to Weldrew's hand.
"How did you get hurt?"
Weldrew considered.
"A fight,"
he said, around his mouthful.
"Did you win?"
"We'll see." The vendor nodded. This close to the Abbey, he knew better than to ask about things he could not understand. Weldrew chewed and swallowed, wiped the juice from his mouth, and saluted the vendor with the fruit.
"Good day to you." "And to you."
As he turned and walked away, the chorus of wordless thoughts and contextless emotions returned, but Weldrew's renewed willpower held them at bay. He knew how to deal with them now. He didn't buy from every vendor he passed, but he engaged them in conversation as he went. He wasn't wearing his blue cloak or gauntlets, but many recognized him as a member of the Order. Some were suspicious, some friendly, some nearly hostile, but it didn't matter. They would talk, and that, he was learning, was what he needed. He talked about the weather, about business, about politics. He even let a few people pry into the usually cliquish gossip of the Order. If word got back to the Presbyter Secondo, he might get in a slight bit of trouble for talking out of school, but the good it was doing him, and he supposed Thiara, was worth it. A wealthy guildmaster invited him to dinner, no doubt congratulating himself on the coup of having a member of the Order into his house without the difficult necessity of a Geist infestation. With 6 children, 2 of whom were married, even the man's large table was crowded. Most of them wanted to know what it was like to be an active, wanted to see him show off some magic. He didn't have his gauntlets with him, but he allowed himself to be convinced to work a cantrip that glowed in midair like a lantern. Afterwards, he made sure to ask each one around the table what they did that they were proud of, and he was rewarded with nearly a dozen stories of accomplishment. Evening turned to night while he was there, and eventually Weldrew determined that it was time for him to leave. He said his farewells, promised half-heartedly to stop by next time he was in the neighborhood, and strolled out into a street that had become much quieter in only a few hours. The vendors were gone. The traffic was gone. There was no one to talk to, and Weldrew felt the voices returning. They had not weakened even a little bit. Weldrew blinked and clenched his fists as the emotional storm blew up around him again, assaulting his inner landscape like a hurricane. Sleep was unthinkable. Sleep was surrender. Sleep was defeat. Madness would take him before he even closed his eyes. He would have to stay awake until the experts at the Abbey could do something to quiet Thiara. He hoped they knew how badly he needed her quiet. He had told them before he left the effect her mind was having on his through the bond, but he feared they did not understand the extreme to which he was being driven. Following some vague instinct, or perhaps just letting his feet follow the easiest path, he stumbled down the hill from the wealthy neighborhood of the Guildmaster toward the harbor. There was something there, some glimmer of lighter activity that promised respite. People. There would be people there. He came to the first establishment that looked like it was open and smiled a bit too broadly at the straight-backed man in formal livery standing at the door. "Good evening," he said, a bit breathlessly.
"Evening, sir," said the man, looking him over with a suspicious eye.
"I wonder if," said Weldrew, holding down a stammer, "wonder if I might go in?"
"This is an establishment of quality, sir. I should warn, sir, that disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. If sir is overly intoxicated, I would warn, sir, that it might be best to move along down the road."
Weldrew glanced in the direction of the harbor. There seemed to be rather a large number of paces between this building and the next one showing any sign of life. He decided it would be better to go inside here. Weldrew found some reserve of strength, held himself a little taller, and cleared his throat.
It will not be a problem, I assure you."
The man opened the door with a gloved hand and stepped out of the way.
"Very well then, sir. Enjoy."
His smile did not look terribly sincere. The conversation with the doorman had had an effect, however, and as Weldrew descended the half-dozen steps down into a busy common room, he felt the sound of conversation once again disperse his mental storm. Many of the small tables were occupied by couples, or perhaps 3 or 4, but near the door he spotted a young, dark-haired woman in a simple but finely constructed gown. A single empty wine glass sat on a table in front of her. She caught him looking at her, and gave the slightest hint of a smile, holding eye contact for longer than was ordinarily acceptable.
"Excuse me," he said, approaching her table. "Is this seat taken?"
"Why, yes," she said, letting her smile reach more of her face. "It's yours."
"I've not seen this place before," he said, taking the chair opposite her. "There's no sign out front."
Master Geroot doesn't need to advertise. People who want to find it can find it. My name is Hissel. Pleased to meet you."
"Weldrew," he said. It seemed quite odd not to be using family names in this environment, but he decided it was best to play along.
A barmaid arrived with a glass and a very expensive-looking bottle. He put them both on the table without asking whether he wanted it, and looked at Weldrew expectantly.
20 cubits, sir."
Weldrew whistled, but produced the money and handed it to the waitress.
"I do hope you won't be bankrupted by a mere bottle of wine," said the woman.
That would be most unfortunate.
The barmaid deftly pulled the cork and poured two glasses. Weldrew's significantly deeper than Hissel's.
No, I've got more than enough, he said, as the barmaid set the bottle back down, bowed slightly, and withdrew.
So what sort of business are you in, Weldrew?
I'm a soldier.
You have the look of a man who's been in battle, he said.
One who's in one right now, he thought, and the battle flared again, summoned by his attention.
I'd rather not think about that right now, he said, a little too fast.
Of course. My apologies. He reached across the table to squeeze his hand, and the surge quelled.
So what brings a lovely woman like you out alone so late at night? He asked.
Sparkle lit up her eyes.
I don't know. Perhaps it was fate. Perhaps I was meant to meet you here and soothe a troubled heart.
I'd like that, he said, and felt his throat constrict, choking back a sudden sob. It was precisely what he needed. He squeezed his hand again.
Come with me. Let's talk somewhere more private.
He nodded, drained his glass, and followed her up the stairs. He expected her to lead him to a booth or more secluded table, but instead their destination was a tiny room with a bed. There were no windows. The only decorations were thick burgundy curtains hanging over every wall. She sat on the bed and leaned back against the headboard, one hand slowly combing through her thick auburn hair.
"What's your pleasure?" she said. "Perhaps start with a massage? You look like you need to relax."
Weldrew realized where he was and exactly what a beautiful woman like her was really doing out alone so late at night.
"No," he said, sitting at the foot of the bed. I just want to talk."
"Really?" he said, and then shrugged. "Well, my time is precious either way. If you've got 50 cubits, I'd be more than happy to sit and talk with you for a while."
"If you've got 50 cubits, I'd be more than happy to sit and talk with you a while."
Weldrew counted out the coins and handed them to her.
"What shall we talk about?"
she asked, dropping the money into a slot on the wall, where it rattled away, down into some hidden repository.
"It doesn't matter,"
he said, wiping a bit of sweat from his forehead.
"Anything." "All right. How about if I tell you stories?"
"That would be fine." Stories Hissel had to tell weren't fairy tales, and they weren't mere gossip. One by one, he laid out for him stories of her adventures among the city's elites. Without naming names or giving away identifiable details, he described trysts in all sorts of situations, from a frenzied coupling in the back hallway at a high society ball to a horseback ride on a rural estate. Weldrew listened intently, letting the erotic power of her voice take up all of his attention, letting his body's natural reactions direct his mind. A comfortable excitement came over him, a strange balance of arousal and calm. Idly, he considered whether this was a form of meditation the Order ought to look into. It certainly would make the daily mental exercises more interesting. Then, as unexpectedly as a shark bursting through pack ice, his mental landscape was shattered. It was as if the legion of emotions coming through the bond had suddenly condensed into a single unified force, breaking through his defenses as if they weren't there. His vision clouded, and his limbs moved of their own accord. Hissel had started talking about a night when a wealthy merchant had hired her to seduce his wife. He wanted the two women to couple in his bed while he watched from a special peephole he had installed in his bedroom. After a few seconds, Weldrew could see again, but the scene had completely changed. Instead of curtains, he was surrounded by heavy stone. Instead of a soft bed, he sat on a wooden pallet. He was pulling off a woman's clothes, but it wasn't Hissel. He was a member of the Order, a sensitive. The woman giggled with a nervous humor that sounded somewhat like Hissel, but then again somewhat not. Even more disturbing, he realized that his own body had changed as well. He couldn't see much, but just from the feel of their bodies coming together, he knew that he was suddenly and inexplicably female. They writhed together for several minutes, crowded together on the narrow bed, hands and mouths exploring each other's bodies with the intensity of virgins. Weldrew managed to collect his wits in spite of his participation in the scene and noticed that there was a fuzziness around it, a lack of focus that lent the affair a dreamlike quality. He focused harder, paying close attention, seeking to bore past what he thought might be some kind of hallucination.
He was rewarded with a flash of reality, a return to the red-curtained room, where he was himself and Hissel was herself. They were wrestling amorously on the bed, and while he had no more control of his movements than before, he at least knew that the vision he had seen was no more than that. And then the moment was over, and Hissel disappeared, once again replaced by the sensitive in the cell. He was finding a new position, bringing fingers and lips and tongue to bear on his mysterious partner in increasingly intimate ways. And then he spoke. He knew that voice, perhaps better than any other except his own mother's. The voice belonged to Thiara. The vision was coming from his partner. It had to be. No one else would be able to construct such a scene but a sensitive. But why this? Why now? Weldrew had never heard of a sensitive having this kind of power over a bondmate. He suspected that a geist was at work, or else some secret sensitive magic of which he had been unaware. Neither was good, and neither was going to succumb to willpower alone. If the best he could do would be to break through to reality for a moment, then regaining control of his body was out of the question. There had to be another way. The feelings flooding him didn't make it any easier. The raw desire and anticipation were mixed with a stark fear of being discovered, of this secret affair becoming known. In his own heart, Weldrew felt uncomfortably like a voyeur, forced to watch this scene unfold, fully aware that Thiara would be mortified if she knew. He was violating her privacy terribly, and worse, there was a part of him that was enjoying it. His magic couldn't help him. All of his powers as an active were outward focused. There was nothing to focus on, no target for his runes. To reach inward to affect the bond itself would take a sensitive. And the only sensitive he had access to had been driven mad. In desperation, Weldrew reached for the bond, calling out for Thiara's help. To his surprise, the chaos of thoughts and emotions was no longer there. Instead, there was a thin thread of consciousness, a mind exhausted, but still functioning, in spite of all it had been through.
Weldrew?
Yes, it's me. Weldrew felt a wave of relief come through the bond.
Oh, by the runes. I thought it had destroyed you.
I'm here. What's going on?
It's that geist. When you thought you had banished it, it attached to me and hid inside my mind. It attached itself to a memory that had been locked away. Somehow, the thing inhabited that memory, used it to shield itself from my conscious mind.
So how do we get rid of it? Panic ran under the surface, coloring Thiara's thoughts. If she had been speaking with lungs and vocal cords, she would have been on the edge of breaking down.
I don't know. This memory doesn't end well. She's Kenera, a mentor when I was younger. We were discovered by her husband. There were rumors. He suspected. Maybe someone told him. He came to the room. He saw everything. He had a sword. He killed her.
And if that memory plays out again?
That woman will probably die at your hands. What's worse, the geist is becoming stronger.
It's feeding from the memory, from your terror, and the terror of that moment.
Yes.
Thiara was nearly hysterical.
Weldrew, I don't know what to do. I've tried everything I know to get rid of it, but it's too strong. She's gonna die, and you're gonna get blamed for it. And then the geist will have another memory to feed on.
I have an idea. Thiara, take deep breaths and concentrate. I want you to add me to the scene. Weldrew sensed a bit of steel coming back to her in the voice.
I can, but why? That will just make it stronger. You might never escape the memory.
Maybe it will be stronger in the short term, but with your support, I might be able to act, rather than just be a puppet for the geist's play. Maybe I can change the script.
Take care, Weldrew!
If they had been standing face to face, instead of bodiless voices in the ambiguous metaphorical space of the bond, she would have kissed him. He experienced the gesture as an intention rather than deed, and returned it with the same friendly affection as it was given. I will. Thiara acted. And the blackness parted before him. His point of view returned to the abbey cell, and he immediately noticed that the wavering dreamlike environment he had noticed before was gone. The geist was definitely getting stronger. The scene before him was just as he suspected, just what he had been told.
There was Kenora, completely naked, limbs splayed for that whore-begotten girl, Thiara. He drew his sword and growled. They looked up, saw him standing there, and mouths gaped. Rage boiled up inside him.
Kenora!
Darling! She cried, scooting backwards, trying to find a corner to crawl into. The bitch she had been lying with scrambled off the bed, pulling the sheet up over her body. That one was just a child, not worthy of his ire. She hadn't made any promises to him, hadn't broken any vows. Hadn't betrayed him in the... Wait. He stopped before he could raise his sword. There was something else. Something he was supposed to do. Something he was supposed to say. What was it? He looked over at Thiara. She watched him with pleading, desperate eyes.
Remember, she seemed to be saying, though her lips weren't moving. Remember.
He dropped his sword, holding his hands to his forehead.
How could you do this?
Thiara reached out and put her hand on his shoulder.
Remember,
she said, and his mind cleared. A faint smile curled his lips. How could you do something like this and not invite me to at least watch? Confusion ran across Kenora's face. He blinked, looked at the fallen saber. Thiara took his hand, then reached out towards Kenora.
Come on, he said. I don't mind. Isn't it better this way?
Kenora slumped back against the wall.
I thought I was dead.
Not this time, said Weldrew. Not this time. The shared hallucination broke, leaving him back at the tavern, standing over a very puzzled professional companion.
What happened?
Magic, said Weldrew. A geist attack. He picked up his trousers from where they had fallen and pulled them up around his waist. I need to go. Are you all right?
I think so.
Good. If you feel anything strange, please look me up at the Abbey. I'll be sure that you're seen to. She nodded nervously, still looking around the room as if in any moment the walls would fall in on her. He finished getting dressed and hurried out. His bond with Thiara had gone back more or less to normal, and he needed to be by her side. He ran. It was nearly dawn by the time he got back to the Abbey, convinced the night watchman to let him in, and arrived at the infirmary. The presbyters were filing out of her room. The archabbot stopped to clap him on the shoulder.
Well done, lad.
Thank you.
He hurried past to Thiara's bedside. Her hair was matted against her head with sweat, and the bedclothes knotted and tangled, but she was calm, smiling. He held out a shaky hand.
Thank you. You saved my life.
He took it in his, felt the trembling weakness of a woman on the edge of complete exhaustion, and put it back on the bed. I think we're about even there. After all, it was me that let you get attacked in the first place.
All right, then we're even.
Weldrew felt a ripple of uncertainty slip through the bond. He smiled. Don't worry. Your secret is safe with me. The ripple quelled, and she smiled back, before drifting off to peaceful, oblivious sleep.
Thanks for listening. Chronicles of the Order is copyright 2010 and all rights are reserved by the authors. If you want to find out more about Chronicles of the Order or the mass market paperback release of Geist from Ace Books, then please go to booksoftheorder.com.